Main Street.
I think I made it when I was ready to make it. And I think a lot of it was attitude. A lot of it was writing ability, consistent writing ability. A lot of it was maturity. A lot of it was the right band. A lot of it was maybe business acumen on my manager's part.
Well, only one thing in common, they got the fire down below. Working on a nightmare. And it was summertime.
Hi, this is Bob Seger in the studio for Night Moves.
Bob Seger had come to the plate 8 times with studio albums prior to 1976. He had singled way back in 1968 with Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, doubled into the gap with Back in 72 and Bob Seger 7, and tripled with 1975's Beautiful Loser. But Night Moves, released in October 1976, was a home run that traveled out of the park and didn't come down until it landed in 2004 at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Writing for AllMusic.com, Stephen Thomas Erlewine suggests why it took so long for Bob Seger to be recognized as an all-star, and I quote, "Stylistically, there's not much change since Beautiful Loser, but the difference is that Seger and his Silver Bullet Band sound intense and ferocious, and the songs are subtly varied. The acoustic ballads reveal the influence of Dylan and Van Morrison filtered through a Midwestern sensibility, and the rockers reveal more of Seger's personality than ever. The mood had never been as successfully varied, nor had his songwriting been as consistent, intimate, and personal. Because of Bob Seger's passion and craft, Night Moves remains a thoroughly terrific album years later," end quote. For this anniversary of the Night Moves album, I joined Bob Seger in the studio.
Now, Smokin' OPs,
mm-hmm.
Back in 72,
mm-hmm.
Bob Seger 7, they all had their musical moments,
mm-hmm.
But your fan base was still Upper Midwest, mm-hmm. Great Lakes at that time.
Mm-hmm.
How did you convince Capitol to re-sign you to a national?
Well, those three albums you just mentioned were all on Warner Brothers, and we got lost in a gigantic corporate thing there, you know? And I remember I used to say to some radio disc jockeys when I'd be doing interviews and stuff, I'd be saying, if they can't make Little Feat a success, I don't feel so bad. Because Little Feat was making records right during that period, and they were doing great stuff. I mean, great stuff.
Musicians, musicians.
Yes, exactly. And so I didn't feel so bad. And then I think Capitol actually re-signed me on the strength of Beautiful Loser. They actually heard the album. It was already done. And I remember Glenn Frey. It was a pivotal moment in my musical career because Glenn had had some success with the Eagles. They were on their third hit single, I think, Peaceful, Easy Feeling, or maybe even their third album, On the Border. I can't quite remember, one or the other. And he came to my house and heard Beautiful Loser, the entire album. He said, "Now you've got it. Now you're writing them, and now you're going to get on the radio." And he literally said that to me, and I said, "Great," you know. And it gave me confidence. And that was when I put together Silver Bullet. And then we did the live album, which was the stuff that we played for about a year and a half. We started Silver Bullet in October of 73. And then the concert, I think the live concert was what? It was in September of, was it 74 or 75?
I think it was 75.
75?
Yeah.
Yeah, 75.
Because it came out right after that in early 76.
Yeah, in early 76. And then, of course, it was followed by Night Moves in October of 76. So we had like two albums back to back in 6 months and a lot of stuff to play. And the next thing you knew, we were headlining. We literally went from the bars to the headliners. We missed all the 2,000, 3,000, 5,000
seats. Is that true?
Yeah, we went from bars to barns, you know, bars to hockey rinks. And we went from cars to planes, no buses. We've never done a bus tour.
Seriously?
We have never done a bus tour. You know, we went from station wagons to jet planes. Oh, yeah.
I remember standing on the corner at midnight trying to get my courage up.
There was this long, lovely dance in a little club downtown. Loved to watch her do her stuff. Through the long, lonely nights, she filled my sleep. Her body softly swaying to that smoky beat down on Main Street. Down on Main Street. In the pool halls, the hustlers and the losers used to watch them through the glass. Well, I'd stand outside at closing time just to watch her walk on past. Unlike all the other ladies, she looked so young and sweet. And she made her way along down that empty street, down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
That's Main Street from Bob Seger's Night Moves. Bob told me that the song was inspired by his teenage years in Ann Arbor, Michigan, just outside of Detroit.
Ann Arbor had a great blues tradition. You know, there were a lot of great R&B black bands that would play for the fraternity kids who were older, and we were too young to go in. I said on the album that I didn't know the name of the place that I was standing outside of one night with some friends of mine, and the girl was dancing in the window, but I think it was called Mr. Flood's. My manager was older and going to University of Michigan at that time, so he was actually in Ann Arbor going to those places while I was outside.
I recall talking to a relaxed, low-key Bob Seger in May of 1975 in an empty hall in Findlay, Ohio, several hours before a concert. We talked about a mutual favorite band, Free. But when he huddled me up to introduce him and his Silver Bullet Band just moments before going on stage later that night, the intensity was like fourth down and goal with 10 seconds left on the clock and the game on the line. And they weren't even the headliners.
Yeah, I think we kind of, Bill Simzik used to say, the Eagles producer, we smelled the blood. It was his kind of thing. I think we could feel it coming on. The goodwill was really building up. I finally had the right band. Drew Abbott was a terrific guitar player. Alto was great on sax. Charlie was a stormer on drums, you know, and I had all the elements. I had Chris, my really solid bass player forever. I had all the elements in place to finally, you know, had the right guys. They were all hungry. They all wanted, there was nobody who wanted to stay home. Why don't we stay home and play the bars, you know, and be close to our families. Everybody wanted to go around the world. We're ready, you know? And boy, I remember, I think 75 or 74, we played 265 nights as a Silver Bullet Band.
Wait a minute. There's only 365 days in a year.
Yeah, we played 265. So that's how bad we wanted it. And you get a hunger going there. What we did was we built up a lot of goodwill. When Beautiful Loser, Live Bullet, and Night Moves came out, we had built up a lot of goodwill. People were seeing us and they're saying, "Ooh boy, ooh boy." So there was like a grassroots thing in all these states in the South and in the Midwest. And of course, the coasts didn't know we were existing.
They're the last to
forget
clue
it,
in.
You know, or Chicago, someplace like that. They hadn't got a clue. We're 320 miles from Chicago, and they didn't have an iota. I'll tell you a great story. We did Pontiac Stadium, 76,000 people here. I think it was 76. And we went the next night and played for 1,500 in a 1,900 seater in Chicago. The next night. And this is 320 miles apart. And I remember Mike Royko. Remember the famous columnist Mike Royko? Do you remember him?
Yes.
Very rather acerbic guy.
Yes.
He wrote in the newspaper on the review that you know the next day, Seeger will never be anything but regional. You know, and he writes, he hasn't got the charisma. He's not going to be a big star.
And, are you serious?
Seriously,
Mike Royko said that
Mike
in the Chicago
Royko
paper.
Said that. And then several 2 years later, after Stranger in Town, and after we came in and I think we did four somewhere at Blackhawk Stadium or something back to back, Royko said, "I take it back."
Oh, well, you got to give him points for that then.
Yeah.
I take it back.
I take it back.
That was the whole column, huh?
Yeah. Saw him last night. He's on his way.
Slipping out of sight all through the midnight.
and dancing, yeah. Find her every time. And when the street lights will flicker, bringing on the night, well, they'll be slipping in the darkness, slipping out of sight, all through the shadows. We'll watch them come and watch them go.
In need of a cool breeze between the navel and the knees, that's Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band with Fire Down Below. Coming up, the true story behind the career breakthrough title song. I'm Redbeard with Bob Seger in the studio for the anniversary of Night Moves.
Hi, this is Bob Seger. Welcome back to In the Studio for Night Moves.
And I'm Redbeard. After 1968's Ramblin' Gamblin' Man first introduced us to Bob Seger, the song Night Moves is arguably the most important song of his long career, and certainly one of his most loved. Bob Seger shares the real story of Night Moves in the studio.
I can tell you exactly what it's about. It's about this dark-haired Italian girl that I went out with when I was 19 years old. Yeah, 19 years old. She was 1 year older than me, I think. And she was really a hot number.
And 1 year at that point in the man's life can make a big difference.
Oh, yeah. And we went out for about a year, and it didn't work out. But I was really crazy about her. And all the things that were happening in that song were happening in my life. We would, like, party out in the fields outside Ann Arbor and farmers' fields and things like that. And There was one guy I remember I knew who had a record player in his car, which was great. Oh, yeah. One of these things that were upside down. You put 45s in them, and they would actually go upside down and play. It was an in-car record player.
I've never heard of
played
such
45s,
thing.
Yeah. Well, you're a little younger than me.
That's too cool.
And it was very cool. And we would get all our cars, you know, these great 50s cars and 60s cars, and we'd circle them in a thing, and we'd have what we called a grasser, and we would dance to the music, and, you know, everybody would ogle everybody else's girlfriend.
And have a real good time.
And have a damn fine time.
I was a little too tall, could've used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high. Way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields where the woods got heavy. Out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy. Working on mysteries without any clues. Working on our night moves. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on our night moves. In the summertime. Some pie in the sky song. We were just young and restless and bored, living by the sword. And we'd steal away every chance we could, to the back room, to the alley, or the trusty woods. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share. Working on our night moves. Trying to lose the awkward teenage blues. Working on a night move.
wonder. Felt the lightning, yeah, and waited on the thunder. Woke last night to the sound of thunder. How far off, I sat and wondered. Started humming a song from 1962. Ain't it funny how the night moves, when you just don't seem to have as much to lose. Strange how the night moves. With autumn closing in, night moves. Night moves.
Song that was very instrumental in me writing Night Moves was Me and Bobby McGee by Kris Kristofferson. You know, singer-songwriters were starting to take to come into fashion. James Taylor, Jackson Browne, Kris Kristofferson, and I related to that kind of stuff, the narrative storytelling. And I think Night Moves came from sort of from that thing too. You know, I like the idea. It was like, this isn't just a pop song. This is like a little novelette.
The inspiration for finishing it was Jungle Land by Bruce Springsteen. His album came out, and I saw where he did the two verses, and they were very strong. But then he went completely somewhere else, tempo wise. He had like a multiple bridge. He had various different things go on, and I thought to myself, that's how I'll finish Night Moves. You know, since I don't want it to sound repetitious, I'll do the first two verses. I'll come back to it at the end, the Night Moves thing, you know, but I will just go somewhere completely different after that. So if you'll notice, there's three different movements after that in the song Night Moves. And I got that idea from listening to Born to Run and Jungle Land, which knocked me out. That album knocked me out.
People responded to Bob Seger's little novelette, as he called it, almost immediately in October 1976. They also could not deny the unique visceral brand of rock and roll which Seger had amalgamated by platooning his own Detroit-based Silver Bullet Band on certain up-tempo numbers with the legendary Muscle Shoals rhythm section on others.
That used to be fun. Recording of Muscle Shoals was fun because they had their sound down so well that you would just start playing, and when you listen to playback, it sounded so much like a record because they recorded so much down there. The Muscle Shoals players in their own studio, everything was really well controlled. The engineer knew how to get their sound, and I would go out there and I would play with them and it would just come out. It would sound like a record. Whereas we really had to struggle to make something like Night Moves or Rock and Roll Never Forgets to sound, shall we say, slick enough for radio, because we didn't know where to put the mics and all this other stuff when we were producing Punch and I, you know?
Which tracks were cut at Muscle Shoals?
Yeah.
And okay. Well, give us an example of that sound.
Welcome to Papa, Ship of Fools. On this one, let's see, in Main Street, Sunspot Baby. That's like me playing rock and roll with Muscle Shoals, and they're trying real hard to play rock and roll with me. Pete Carr was a really, really good guitar player, and the Hawk was a fine drummer, you know, real fine drummer. And Barry was real solid on piano. It was they would listen to our stuff and try to play like us. Is basically, you know, and they had a lot of fun doing it because mostly they did R&B and country. They didn't get to do this stuff very often.
Where did you get the song Come to Papa? Who wrote that?
The same guy who wrote I Can't Stand the Rain, Willie Mitchell, I think, wrote Come to Papa, if I'm not.
Yeah, you're right. How'd you get that song?
I heard it on an Ann Peebles record.
Wow.
You know? And actually, I think I even heard it in Muscle Shoals, because I would get Memphis radio. It's 125 miles away. And I think I heard it on one of the trips down, and I started thinking, you know, it was Come to Mama.
Yeah.
And it was sung by Ann Peebles.
There you go.
Who did I Can't Stand the Rain, uh-huh. A great record. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure people have heard that. Mm-hmm. If they haven't, they should. I thought, God, I would love to do that. Was maybe one of my first Memphis kind of things.
If the sun ain't shining bright, it's hard to understand, the whole thing is getting out of hand. Come to Papa, come see your Papa, yeah. If you need a pacifier,
Bob Seger with the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section in Alabama, just east of Memphis, where Willie Mitchell originally wrote and recorded it with Ann Peebles. That's Come to Papa from Night Moves. Next, with the American idolization of pop music, Bob Seger has some very interesting things to say about paying dues and earning it. I'm Redbeard in the studio with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Bob Seger for the anniversary of Night Moves.
Hi, this is Bob Seger. Welcome back to In the Studio for Night Moves.
I'm Redbeard. In April 1976, Bob Seger and his Silver Bullet Band released Live Bullet, a double album recorded before a huge hometown Detroit arena crowd. Ostensibly a best of up to that point in his career, the album initially sold moderately well through the summer of 1976, particularly in Seger's traditional hotspots of Detroit, Cleveland, and St. Louis.
Did the Live Bullet album, did that give you some time to write what would then come out on Night
Moves? Night Moves was being written, being recorded while Live Bullet was released. Sure. You know, I mean, we finished Night Moves probably 2 months after Live Bullet was released, and then we went right back on the road.
Wow.
So we were actually working on Night Moves, and we put out Live Bullet while we were working on Night Moves. And it was sort of like a thank you to the fans who didn't forget us, whose goodwill helped carry us over the hump. A thank you to radio. There were a lot of people who were, you know, in our corner. And you've told me a few times when you would turn people on to in radio to our stuff as you traveled around as a disc jockey in various markets. And it was a thank you to all those people. Thanks for not forgetting us. Thanks for helping us over this hump. You know, we always wanted to be in the big buildings and really be heard by a lot of people and get our message out and our energy out, and it's great to be here.
Sweet 16's done 31. Get
Rock and Roll Never Forget.
Mm-hmm.
Was that one of the ones that came really fast?
Yeah, relatively. I wanted to just write an honest appraisal of where I was at that moment in time. I was 31 years old, and I was damn glad to be here.
With the Night Moves album, Bob Seger recalls finally receiving the critical recognition that many fans felt was long overdue.
I remember when Night Moves hit, there were people saying, you know, it's overnight sensation, and we were going, overnight sensation.
Yeah, this 12 guy's years.
Come
yeah.
on. This guy's mm-hmm. a 12-year overnight sensation. Mm-hmm. Give me a break. Are you glad in hindsight that your star didn't finally rise
until you
were more mature?
I think I made it when I was ready to make it, and I think a lot of it was attitude, a lot of it was writing ability, consistent writing ability, a lot of it was maturity. A lot of it was the right band. A lot of it was maybe business acumen on my manager's part. We've been together now, same manager. All those things fell into place at the right time. I think now I hear some stuff from my earlier albums that was very strong, but it was not on a consistent level. There were things where I really missed the mark. I always was a performer first. And I think a singer second, maybe I'm a singer first because I was a performer. That's what I did. So that's the same thing. But maybe like a songwriter second, and definitely a studio, you know, record maker last. That was the thing I had the least time to work on, was making records. Songwriting was the second least amount of time I had. And then the performing was what we did all the time. That was our job, you know?
And you felt most confident in that role?
Well, that was, I think...
That's what you did.
That was our major, major success. That was the thing we spent most of our time doing, let's put it that way. So that was the thing that was probably the most second nature to us. Everything else was a little more difficult to deal with.
A writer once described you back in the Night Moves era as in the studio as a bull in a china shop.
Mm-hmm.
Accurate?
No, I don't think so. I think I knew. I don't think I was uncoordinated or tyrannical in any way.
No. I think more of the muscularity of your singing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Have you ever blown a mic out?
Not that I know of, but that was probably the easiest thing to do. You know, I knew when I was singing well because I sang every night, so. I would work hard on the vocals, but 9 times out of 10, that was not the hard part. The hard part was getting the tracks to sound like they belonged on the radio. We just weren't very good at that, you know, and we would try to get the best engineers. But then again, we were a live band. We wanted our live sound and a live sound is not always, as again, in maybe the example of Jay Giles, they would take their live equipment in there and it just wouldn't sound very good, but it would sound great live. You have that ambience of the room bouncing around and everything else. So it was, basically we were a live band, we were a live act, and we tried to, and for a long time it took us a while to learn our way around in the studios. You know, and to develop the patience that you need to, you know, to get quality sound, sonic sound,
yeah.
Not energy. Doing any energy we had.
to 1955. That's Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band covering some old-time rock and roll with Mary Lou on Night Moves, the landmark album which ignited a string of 11 platinum and 7 multi-platinum albums, totaling nearly 50 million in sales.
I'll tell you a few moments that come to move on Night Moves. Let's say, was Rolling Stone call it the best album of the year? Critics' Choice, best album of the year. So that felt pretty good. They also called me the best singer of the year, rock singer of the year. I've got some awards upstairs, you know, for those too, and that made me feel real good, you know. And maybe that was some that plus I think we got to number 3 on the charts with the Night Moves album, and of course now it's up to 5 million, you know. And Live Bullet is as well, and Stranger is the biggest. It's 6.5, and Against the Wind is right behind Stranger and Live Bullet.
It's too bad you can't do any business.
Yeah, well, it's thank you, radio. You know, they've just been playing us over and over and over for years, and thank you, people, for requesting them. You know, the audience is out there, because it's just one of those things. We have just been steady, what they call catalog sellers. You know, probably people don't know what that means. You and I know what that means. And the catalog has just gone and gone and gone over and over and over. Yeah, I'm just very fortunate that the fans still, you know, really like our music and really like to see us live. And I try not to think too much about why or anything. I just try to go out there and do the best we can do, you know, and get a lot of rest when we're on the road and stuff, and have a lot of I have a lot of respect for my audience, I think. And I think everybody in the band does too. And so we try to do our best. We do long sound checks, try to not overbook ourselves, even though, especially me, this is mostly my doing, because I sing so hard for 2 hours 20 2 hours 30 minutes a night. I try never to do more than 4 concerts a week, and so we have like one day break and 1 2-day break built into every week on the road, and we can make a lot more money, and I could sing a lot worse, you know. And but I respect the audiences enough, and if I can't sing on any given night, which is very rare, I've got a throat of cast iron, actually. I very seldom have throat problems, but if I can't, I will not play that night, you know. I'm fortunate radio has played us so much, you know. I mean, this I've had a really lucky life, you know, as far as this is concerned. I work really hard on my music, but nevertheless, you have to have the support of a lot of different people.
She packed up her bags and she took off down the road. She left me here stranded with the bill she owed. She gave me a false address.
closest I came was a month old bill. I checked the Bahamas and they said you was gone. I can't understand why she did me so wrong. But she packed up her bags and she took off down the road. She left me here stranded with the bill she owed. She used my address and my name, put my credit to shame.
Bob Seger from Night Moves with Sunspot Baby on the anniversary of this legendary landmark in rock history. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking so much Bob Seger for insights into Night Moves. Special thanks, as always, to Punch Andrews. You can email to redbeard@inthestudio.net. Visit www.inthestudio.net for this and your other favorite interviews. In the Studio was written this edition by yours truly. Transcription by Jane Carpenter. Theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio is produced by Barbarossa Limited. Copyright 2006. All rights reserved.